All right, ready?
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Ashley.
Hi.
How are you feeling?
Wonderful.
So introduce yourself, because there's a lot of people that listen and don't watch, so everybody knows who we're talking with.
My name is Ashley Lane.
Ashley Lane. Hi.
Hi.
It's becoming a new thing for me that every time I'm like, hey, since we're finished shooting, you want to go over here and talk for a while? So we just wrapped up a shoot today for Kink's Device Bondage. How was your shoot?
It was amazing.
Was it good?
It always is.
Wow. Thanks. So I don't have any questions prepped. I figured we'd just kind of talk and we'll see what happens. Do you have anything you want to talk about specifically, or do you want me to just start asking questions? Sorry about the video. There's a blinking light in here.
I don't know.
Do you want to just start talking about things? Let's start with this. Well, of course you do, because you're sitting in front of the person that did it. For people that don't know, you did your first shoot with me many moons ago on the Sadistic Rope channel. Sadistic Rope, right? And since, for the longest time, it was just the two of us, like just you and I.
Yep.
Because you were like, I don't do boy girl, I don't do girl girl. Mm-hmm. And then you've slowly kind of broadened your horizons. What made you decide that, okay, I'm going to start doing boy girl sex on camera instead of just letting JP beat me up?
I guess because I had been doing it, I think, full time for 3 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. Just the fetish, non-sex, and I just wanted to do something more. And since I'm a giant slut, and I like having sex, I was like, might as well just do it for money.
You're going to do it anyway, so you might as well get paid for it.
Yeah.
So. What was your hesitation? Why were in the beginning, were you like, I don't know. And again, this is very chill, so if I ask you something, you're like, I don't talk about that, JP, fuck off, we just won't talk about
it. Yeah. I don't know, because, like, obviously, doing all the BDSM and the fetish, like, they're like, oh, well, you can't come back from that.
Right.
But then, like, having sex on camera is, like, a whole different level. And I guess I just wasn't sure if I wanted to make that jump.
Right.
Because I was like, oh, I might go back to school, get, like, a normal job, which I still don't know what that even would be.
Yeah. That's a hell of a transition out of this industry to, like, I'm going to be a teacher. Which, not to say we can't, but it's also one of those situations where it's, like, people are judgy.
Yes, they are.
So, Miss Lane, there's a gap in your portfolio here. We were noticing there's about a 5-year gap where you are unemployed. You want to talk to us about that? And they're like, oh, I was just sucking dick.
That would be hilarious.
That would be funny. So, once you started doing it, were you happy? Was it a positive thing? Were you like, fuck yeah, I'm glad I did this?
Yes. I think I mentioned to you earlier that I was like, why didn't I do this sooner?
Mm-hmm.
But I think I did it at the right age.
Right.
I was in much better, like, headspace. I just, I'm wiser.
Yeah.
So.
it comes with time. And it was smarter. And I remember we were talking about this too. Like, you came to me several years ago and were like, I'm thinking about this. I've had a few people talk to me and blah, blah, blah. And I feel like I stayed in the middle of the road. And the same thing I think I tell everybody is there's no take backs. Like, just remember, once you do it, it's done. And you can't go to a producer, just like you can't, just in Hollywood, they can't go to the Lionsgate or, you know, whatever, and be like, hey, I don't like that movie. I'm deciding I'm not an actor anymore. Can you take that movie down? No, that doesn't happen.
Mm-mm.
But you're happy with the decision?
Yes.
Has there been, like, a certain scene that stands out that you're like, fuck, I could do that every single day? You can or cannot describe the person that it was up, so it's kind of up to you. But is there something that you're like, fuck, if every day was like that, it would be perfect?
There's quite a few scenes, actually.
Oh, really? Do tell.
I mean, I love, like, super rough sex.
Right. Of course you do.
Yeah. So, like, any scene like that, just fucking pounding and choking and just manhandling, I love that a lot.
Right.
I did do a public disgrace.
They tied you with the waves. Were you getting hit with the waves?
With the waves, yeah.
That looked pretty hot. Yeah. You guys should go look that up. That's the imagery. I didn't watch it, but just seeing the imagery of you tied there with the waves coming in, I was like, fuck.
Yeah. And, like, they, like, led me in, like, crawling into the bar, you know, and all the guests were there, and they're all stepping on me, touching me, and I just love
the attention.
I don't want to say I love, like, the strange. I just love, maybe I do, but I love all the people and, like, the interaction, because there's so much energy there.
Right.
And it's, like, overwhelming in the best possible way. And it, yeah, like my male talent, Tommy, unfortunately, he was very sick. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really get any...
The full Tommy potential.
Yes. So, like, the little second scene of that, like, I didn't get fucked at all. I tried giving him a blowjob, but he, again, was super sick.
Right.
Yeah.
He's a badass. We love Tommy. I'm trying to see about reaching out and getting him. That's the new thing is I'm... Because, I mean, I think people are enjoying the feedback I'm getting. People are enjoying the overall thing that we're mm-hmm. doing because we're just getting to know people. But, like, Tommy, because I know Tommy, and I know Derek Pierce and Owen Gray, like, those yeah. are three guys. I'd probably reach out to Mickey, too, and see if he's down. But, like, I got Owen and I have been talking, Derek mm-hmm. Pierce and I have been talking, because people, like, I've to reference Derek several times, so I'm like, maybe I should just see. But he's missed all. Everybody's so busy, so it's like, hey, can you just mm-hmm. stop and come over and just hang out and talk with me? It's one of those things. That's why it's easy for the girls, because I'm like, hey, you're already here. Mm-hmm. You're not leaving for another hour. You want to talk? Yeah. Let's see. You travel a lot. Can we talk about your van?
Yes.
Your old van. Tell us about, because I know about this, but describe to people, tell them about the van and tell them about how you used to do things. Because I love that. I thought it was awesome.
Yeah. So how the van came about was I was couch surfing in Portland and I wasn't sure if I wanted to live there. And so I was like, what do I want to do? So I was like, oh, I should live in an RV. Drive up and down the West Coast because, you know, I had jobs in Portland, like San Francisco and LA.
Right.
And so I bought an actual RV and it was way too much work. So then I sold it and I bought this van because I was like, oh, I want something more inconspicuous, you know, like
no urban one's... camping.
Yeah. And that way I got to have my dog with me while I was traveling.
Right.
So I hopped in it. I moved most of my stuff that I needed in it, the rest in a storage unit.
Right. So what kind of van was it?
It's a 1974 Ford Econoline.
Such an awesome van.
Yeah. It was brown and gold. It had the extended hardtop. It had, like, shag carpet on the
Now, did you do the work on this, or you bought it that way?
No, I bought it that way. And it was, like, handmade or, like, handcrafted. The inside was, like, this dark wood, bomb-ass stereo system. Like, they, yeah.
I remember the pictures because you used to document it on... one of your social medias, didn't you?
Yeah, was probably it? On Instagram.
Probably on Instagram. And I remember the first time I saw it, I was like, you're not just like living in a van. It's like traveling. Like you're like in the van. Like that was such a rad van. And with it being like the 70 model or the 70s, I should say. And then like, and it was like the doo-doo brown kind of 70s. But you know what, right?
Am yeah, I wrong? It was.
It was like this, but it's like this beautiful brown. Mm-hmm. Doo-doo is just unfortunately the color I use. And then, like, it had kind of this, like, it was like a muted gold almost, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, go ahead. I'm reminiscing about your van. I'm like, I love that van. And I never saw it in person.
I loved it, too. I sold it when it died on me. It had a cracked head gasket. Ooh. And it warped the engine because I was driving on it. And so I need a new engine. I couldn't afford it. So I sold it. So now it's somewhere in Belgium.
That's interesting. How the fuck did your van get to Belgium?
Some couple met up with me. They were from Belgium. Mm-hmm. They bought it, drove it to San Francisco, put it on a ship, shipped it. Which I had a hard enough time finding parts for it. Like I had...
For an American van in America.
Yeah. Like I had to buy like a differential like off eBay.
Right.
And then like... my van got broken into, and the glass they don't make anymore. So I had to go to a junkyard. I found a car, like, the same model 6 months later. And, like, you know, took two of the windows. one is a spare.
Right.
But, like, yeah, having it in Belgium, they must have known someone.
Yeah. But there's a lot of, I found out, I watch a lot of car. I watch a lot of TV. I watch more TV than I should. That's probably what's wrong with me. But I watch a lot of car stuff, and there's several car shows that they have people that come over from Europe, and they're like, hey, we want these American cars, and we're going to take them back, you know, to Europe, and whether it's wherever in, you know, Germany, Belgium, and they're like, that's their thing. And it's like, there must be something somewhere, because it's like, how do you get this many cars over there, unless there were, back then, there were those cars that were being shipped over, and I don't know.
Maybe.
I feel like in the 70s there was all like the itty bitty cars that were being made in Europe. So
yeah. And they fit better on the roads there.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I don't know. I say yeah. I've never been to Europe.
No. You must go.
Where did you go though? Because you kind of just traveled. You just moved up and down the coast just for work. No matter. So whenever you work called, you're like, all right, I'm going.
Mm-hmm. Like I would book maybe like 3 weeks in like one spot, and then I would just go elsewhere. You know, sometimes went along the coast. I went, you know, in the disgusting part of California up the middle. Just a boring drive.
And it smells bad.
Yes.
That part on the 5 where there was a Harris Ranch, I think it is.
Yeah, it's rough.
Unless you've driven that, and it's so hard to explain. I'm sure there's probably places in the Midwest like that too, but that's just for miles, all you smell is cow shit.
Yeah.
And unless you're aware of it, all of a sudden it sneaks up on you. And you're like, something smells really, what the fuck? And then it's in your car, and it's always in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
Always in the summer when we would ride through there, and it just would get in your car, and I always thought I could taste it. It smelled so bad. I'd be like, that gets at my mouth.
Exactly.
But you know what I'm talking about. Yes. And then it's the next 3 miles are spoiled because all you smell is fucking cow shit.
Yep.
Where was your favorite place to stop and set up?
My favorite place. I guess I only went there once though. Because I would go to like national parks and, you know, nature out in the wilderness. There's this place called the Alvord Desert. It's in southeastern Oregon. It's right on like the Oregon-Nevada border. The nearest like town is like an hour and a half. You have to drive like 30 miles down a gravel road.
Holy shit.
And it's like a dry lake bed, like the Black Rock Desert, like Burning Man. And there's like some hot springs outside that you can like pay to like see, but it's just this huge dry lake bed and you just drive out and then you can be naked. You can do whatever the fuck you want.
Well, now you have my attention. I keep forgetting to bring my laptop. I've had my laptop like one time and it sat here like half closed because we just talked and never got to research. And I was like, I need to be able to research more.
Yeah. It's Alvord.
Hold on. There we go. Alvord. O-R-D.
And I saw...
Desert, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's funny. My fucking phone's listening.
And I saw the Milky Way out there. Which was stunning.
With your naked eye.
Yes.
Yeah. That's something that's like a lot of people that have never seen it, I don't think understand or can comprehend. Like to be somewhere to where there's so little or just not, like totally devoid of light pollution and you look up and it's like, it's scary. Like I've actually gotten tears because you get so like, I'm so small. Like you, like it's... intimidating. It's humbling to sit there and see that many stars. We actually were lucky enough when I was shooting that last movie, because we were out in the middle of the desert, and there was civilization around, but there was few and far between, and it was we were also up high enough that when you looked up, you didn't have the city lights aiming in your eyes. And we sat there, my wife and I sat there one night after everyone was leaving, and we just kind of was like, look up, and we just sat there and kind of had this like moment of like, I miss this, because it's so you don't get to see it that often.
No. Not at all. And like in LA, there was one time I was in Hollywood. Yeah. It's and then so to the west of it is the Steen Mountains. And we drove up there. Fucking gorgeous. You can see Oregon, you can see Nevada, Idaho, right? Idaho.
I don't remember. Yeah, Idaho cuz Ohio or Iowa.
No.
No, Iowa is over in the Midwest, closer to the East
Coast. Yeah, so it's Idaho.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Idaho and Iowa always get mixed up. Idaho's fucking potatoes on this side. Sorry for anybody in Idaho. I'm not trying to be dumb and offensive about your potatoes.
Which is actually a super beautiful state. You would have never, like, you wouldn't know. We drove through, like, the northern part of Idaho. Like, forest. There's tons of camp, like, free camping, hot springs, like, creeks and rivers and...
You guys should believe what she's saying because I'm sitting here listening to her and looking at pictures of this Alvord.
Yes,
Alvord Desert. It's in southeastern Oregon. And all of you should be like, fucking shit, I need to go here. Because this is just the pictures I'm looking at on my phone. I'm like, we just went to Oregon and we went to Seattle to see some friends and then flew from Seattle. Or no, we flew into Seattle, hung out with some friends. And then drove from Seattle to Portland and hung out with some more friends and then flew back. So that drive, because it's like a 3-hour drive, I think.
3-hour drive,
It was so easy. Like, it's so beautiful. And it's like, oh, look, this really big, it's the first time I'd ever been to Seattle or Portland. And it was this beautiful, awesome, cool city. And it was a really clean city. And then, like, that there's nothing. Like mm-hmm. you're in the middle of nowhere anywhere.
Yep.
It was amazing how fast it disappeared. Yeah, and then all of a sudden it was the same thing. Like you went through a couple small little cute towns mm-hmm. and then boom, we're in Portland again. Or back in Portland. It was really weird. This is beautiful. Like I can't believe we yeah. probably were really close to this. I'm mad now. So this you would clearly go back there?
Oh yeah. Definitely. I would want another van though.
I wouldn't blame you. Have you ever heard of the Salton Sea?
Yes.
Have you been there?
That I want to go. Very briefly. But there's Bombay Beach. Which they have, I forget what the event is, but it's like a bunch of artists come together. They have a bunch of like installations and it's there for like a week, I think.
Okay. Is that close to the Salton Sea?
Mm-hmm. It's okay. On the Salton Sea. Cause, there were like little towns around and Bombay Beach was one of them, but it's like, I'm sure the population's like 20.
Yeah, it's pretty, from what I've seen, because I'm super into abandoned stuff, hence mm-hmm. the weird movies that I do.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm obsessed with it. I was actually going to pitch a site idea called Abandoned Bondage, and the whole goal was just to have this beautiful bondage. It was like, it's still going to be like a hog-tied version, but it was going to be like this abandoned island off the coast of Japan that was a mining village mm-hmm. that they built. It's a man-made island, and I can't remember the name of it. I could probably look it up. But there's that, and then there's, like, the ghost towns in California, and then there's, like, you know, anywhere that I could go in that wasn't dangerous. Like, I'm not going to go to, like, where the nuclear spill happened. Like, have you heard about that, too, right? Like, it's, what the fuck is the name of it?
What, Chernobyl?
Yes. Like, the entire city, like, this city was this beautiful metropolis, and it was, like, booming, and mm-hmm. there were so many people there. And then, you got to go. Yeah. Like, now we got to go. So, and you should watch, it's Abandoned something. It's on TV. It's called like Abandoned Places or something like that. And there's this series and it's like however many, like it's probably 3, 4, 5 seasons long, mm-hmm. 8 to 10 episodes. And everyone touches on like 2 or 3 different places that are okay. really weird. So, and they, one recently was the Salton Sea and it was talking about how, you know, there were all of these cities and all like everything popped up around it. And it was like, it was giving Vegas a run for its money, or mm-hmm. it was the Vegas before Vegas was Vegas, or yeah. something like that. Because it was the place that everyone in LA was like, I have to go here. Mm-hmm. And then, obviously, shit started going south, and they were like, there's people that still live there. I think, like you said, there's like 10 or 20 people. And it's good for them, but it's supposedly, it reeks of dead fish. Mm-hmm. And when you go walking out on the beach, what you feel like is beach, or mm-hmm. like pebbles, is just bone from the fish that have washed up and just died. Oh. And it's weird the way the accident that happened that formed it. And when it mm-hmm. happened, people are like, fuck yeah. And then it just turned out to be horribly toxic. Mm-hmm. But it's a cool story. So if you ever get a chance, you should look it up because yeah. I think it's awesome. But like I said, I'm also obsessed with abandoned stuff.
I like abandoned stuff, except if it's haunted, then I'm like,
You don't like ghosts?
No.
You obviously believe in ghosts.
Uh-huh. I had a... it was when I went to, I saw Sergeant Major mm-hmm. and, he lives in a small town and, we went to like his studio to like shoot or whatever. And I guess we brought back some sort of spirit. We went back to, his place and his wife said she woke up and she felt something racing around the bed and she filmed it. And, like, you know, I'm asleep, whatever. I didn't feel anything.
Right.
And then she showed me the next morning, and there's a white blob, like, across the screen, like, out of nowhere.
Right.
And so I'm just like... So she, you know, saged me, and then I left, but...
So you guys picked up something somewhere. Mm-hmm. I believe... I'm a total believer. I had my grandfather, and I had... 3 parents growing up. I had 2 moms and a dad.
Yeah.
That's a whole nother all. That's JP. That's all JP by himself. You guys, well, one day when you guys run, when I run out of footage for anything else, we'll do that one. but it was my mom's father up in Wisconsin. He passed away and I was super close with him and like I was shook. Like I was like, fuck God, there is no heaven. Like there's mm-hmm. I like, threw everything away. I don't believe in religion anymore. You're a piece of shit. Fuck you, God. And I rolled over and went to sleep. Which is funny, because in retrospect, like, I prayed to tell him to fuck off. Mm-hmm. So, that's kind of funny. But anyway, we went up, and we would go up every summer. And one summer, I went up, and it was a single story, except for there were two really tiny bedrooms upstairs. Mm-hmm. And the stairs were super narrow, and this is an older house. And I'm up there, and I can't sleep, and I can't sleep, and I finally hear coming up the stairs. You can hear the boots coming up, and I'm like, that's not Mom, because Mom would be barefoot, because it's at night, and Grandma doesn't come up here. And I'm laying, and I hear it, and it's there's something, a larger person coming up the stairs. Fuck, and I hear him get to the top of the stairs and walk, and then when you got to the top of the stairs, you took a right, and it was door. There was a door on each side of you, and then there was a little area, because then, like I said, they were tiny. And I heard it, this person, this thing, walk into the room. So I turn my back to the door, and I'm looking out the window, and I'm like freaking the fuck out. And I can hear it.
Is this during the day or at night?
No, this is at night.
At night.
And I'm wide awake. Like, I'm very awake. Like, I remember thinking, like, squeezing myself under the covers, like, fuck. And I'm panicked. Like, I'm freaking out because I don't want to see what's coming in the room. And it walks around to the side of the bed that I was facing. So I turned over really quick and turned my back towards the window now and facing the door. And then I felt it sit down on the bed. And when I felt this person sit down on the bed, I instantly was like, it's Grandpa. And I was totally cool. And I just sat there, and I fell asleep a few minutes later. Like, there was no big thing. There was no cool conversation. No, I'm not trying to get you all choked up. But it was the weirdest thing. Like, I was about to, not figuratively, literally shit in the bed. And I'm probably, I was a teenage boy at the time. I was probably 14 or 15. Mm-hmm. And I was terrified. But as soon as he sat on the bed, I didn't feel anything else. And I just completely got super, super calm and super relaxed. I was like, it's just Grandpa. And I closed my eyes, and I went to sleep. And that was it. And I never, but that was the, and people are like, what are you? And I'm like, I felt the bed. I heard the boo. Like, there was all of these things. And people, I feel like, experience stuff like that all the time. And they toss it off to, it was my imagination. Or, my eyes are playing tricks on me. Like, people have excuses all the time. And, like, this shit happens around all of us all the time. And people just dismiss it. I wonder how many people are like, that's it. I'm not subscribing to this guy anymore. He's crazy.
No, I would say there's truth to it. Sure.
I think everybody's got their own experience, and who knows what it was, but that was at my age, that was what was going on, and I don't know. I don't think that I created it. I think that something happened, and I was open enough to it. That was, because like I said, I was ready to jump up and run. Like, my next step was to get the fuck out of that room and never look at who was in the room with me, and instead, I instantly got calm, which was weird. So, like I said, I believe in this stuff, too. So, I do. So, anyway...
Yes.
Sergeant Major is where we left off. I got on my whole storytelling tangent. Sometimes I get a little carried away.
No, it's okay.
You said, you were telling me earlier that you, your new fascination is Utah. Where in Utah did you go that you were like, oh, this is my place now?
Moab.
I haven't been there yet.
So Zion is only 2 hours from Las Vegas.
Oh, I know. We go there all the time.
So I met this guy at Burning Man last year, and he lived in Salt Lake City, and so I was like, I haven't been to Utah. I want to go. I had some days off.
Right.
And so he met me there, but I drove from LA to Moab, and I took the scenic route where I drove through Zion, and I kind of, like, took these one-lane roads.
Right.
And, like, snaked way through to Moab, and, took me 16 hours to get there, but I stopped. And it's like with every corner was a new view. Mm-hmm. There was forest, there was these canyons, insane rock formations, the colors. And it's like, I didn't feel bad, but my dog was in the car with me. She probably thought I was crazy because I was like cursing. I was like, how the fuck does this exist?
How can something this beautiful be here and the whole world's not here staring at it all the time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's so desolate out there. And yeah, so I went, we were there for a little bit, and then I went to Monument Valley, then I drove through Page, Arizona, saw Horseshoe Bend, and then Grand Canyon, came back to Vegas, and then home.
So you were like, I'm going to take my time, and I'm going to see everything on the way.
I did that whole trip in 4 days.
That's a lot of...
That's a lot of driving.
Yeah. But Salt Lake City is... It's 6.5-7 hours from here. If you like got down and like I'm going straight from here.
Yeah.
I think it's like 6 or 7.
Yeah, so I was just there last week, and from Salt Lake we went to Moab again. It was me and my other friend Olivia, and 4 hours maybe. Okay. 4.5. So it wasn't that bad.
Yeah. Our place is like Cedar City, Duck Creek, which mm-hmm. is, I don't know if you know where Cedar City is. It's mm-mm. like when you come in from here, you cut off that little tip of Arizona as you're going, and you hit Utah where St. George is,
mm-hmm.
and then you start going north. And once you go north, there's like all these little places. There's I call it Hurricane, but apparently the locals call it Hurricane or something like that. It's
Hurricane. Yeah.
It's Hurricane. Mm-hmm. And it's a little offbeat going towards, like, you can go, there's several ways to get over to Zion. Mm-hmm. That's one of the more known ones.
Yeah.
But if you go a little further, there's a bigger place or bigger town. It's called Cedar City, and there's like a college there of some sort.
Oh, okay.
So it's not as, there's still a heavy Mormon population there. But it's not as much as some of the other smaller cities because of the college thing. So you don't mm-hmm. see as many. And there's nothing wrong with Mormons. I'm not talking shit, fuckers. but they're the super, super traditional, with all of them wearing the same mm-hmm. kind of dress and the same hair, the girls anyway.
Yeah.
And whereas Cedar City, you don't see it as much because I guess it's more progressive in there mm-hmm. because of the college town, which means there's better places to eat, there's cooler like little spots. But there's this, when you're riding through like the main area of Cedar City, there's this one little road right there, and if you don't pay attention, you'll pass it. It's mm-hmm. a two lane, and you start going up, and instantly you're going up the mountain, going up the mountain, going up the mountain, and it's beautiful drive up, and it's a pretty yeah. quick jump up the mountain, and all of a sudden, I shit you not, there's all the rocks, and you come around a bend, and it just flattens out, and there's green valleys for fucking days, and it looks like something out of a fucking movie. Like, you're like, there's no way this is real.
Mm-hmm.
And we were going up there because we were staying in Cedar City, and we were riding to go see some caves. The caves mm-hmm. we found out were caves that were basically lava tunnels that had dried up for like however thousands of years ago. So we went down in the caves, and as we were coming back, I forgot to put gas in the car. So we drove all the way from here to Cedar City, drove around a bunch, and then decided to go up the mountain. When we were coming back down the mountain, I'm like, oh shit, we don't have any gas. Like, well, thank God it's downhill. I'm like, we're going to just see. And Becky was like, I think I remember this little village as we were coming up, and hopefully they have a gas station there, yeah. which they did. And it was a place called Duck Creek. Beautiful. There's this little strip, and it's basically a couple of shops, a couple of restaurants. Well, there's more than a couple of shops, but there's a couple of restaurants, and there's the property place, but it's an itty bitty little spot. And there's this massive field behind it, and there's a circle that goes all the way around, and there's all these houses and cabins, and there's a church back there.
Yeah.
There's like a lodge that we stayed in once, and it's this beautiful, beautiful place. And we were talking to the owner, or the guy who ran the lodge, and he said that the actual population of people that live there year-round, mm-hmm. I think he said it was like 600, because it's way the fuck up on a mountain and yeah. all the goddamn snow, and most people are like, nope. But he mm-hmm. said most of the property was owned by people out of either LA or Vegas, because they buy it all and that's where they go. So next time yeah. if you're over there and you're like, I want to see something cool, go find Duck Creek. All but right. it's also like four cool. wheelers and like side by side, like mm-hmm. it's very much an ATV town, because that's all it is dirt roads that go everywhere yeah. and trails that go everywhere.
That's really cool.
Super awesome. That's like our spot.
Can you rent ATVs?
Yeah, there? You yeah. can rent them. Okay. So you can drive up there, and I think you take a little course, a little safety course, and they give mm-hmm. you a helmet, and you get on whatever you want. So you can either do like a four-wheeler. I think they might even do dirt bikes, or they do side-by-sides. And like I said, trails everywhere. Beautiful trails. And a lot of the trails, even if they're smaller ones, they're really well-maintained, and then they bump into bigger dirt roads. So you've still got full-size vehicles that are coming down, and you can just ride right along with them. Just beautiful shit. We tell the kid that's, we're like up around Zion, we tell him that's where the dragons live. You know what I'm talking about? Those peaks that are so high, you're mm-hmm. like, there's no way anything could be up there except a dragon. And he's like, Daddy, there's like dragons. And I was like, you can't prove that there aren't, just like I can't prove that there are. So therefore, fuck you. That's where the dragons live.
I like it.
So
I'll pretend there's dragons up there too.
See, it'll make it more fun. The next time you go to Zion, you're going to look and see the highest, craziest thing, and you're going to be like, that's where the dragons live.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to start a trend. It's going to be my hashtag, it's where the dragons live. I'm just kidding. Where do we go from here? What do we talk about? What do you want to talk about?
I don't know. What do you want to talk about?
I don't know. I don't know when we started.
I feel like we're just like jumping around at like...
That's usually the way this goes, though. We usually just kind of talk.
Random stuff.
I had Ariel X on here last week, and she did caught me off guard and asked me this question. So I'm going to ask you because it's a good conversation.
Okay.
What is your, if at all, do you have a favorite conspiracy theory? Do you like conspiracy theories? Are you into them?
Not super into them.
You know, I have conspiracy theories. What do you? Let's do that. Let's back it up and get basic. What are you into? What? Tell us some of the things that you like to do. We know you like to travel. What else do you like to do? We know you like to be tied up and tortured. We know those things.
I like to have sex.
You like to have sex. Now tell us something else. Tell us something. Inquiring minds want to know. Ashley Lane.
I do like hiking, and I used to like reading. I'm trying to get back into it. But I used to read a lot. Like, I would read probably at least one book a week.
And you just stopped one day?
Well, you know, life, you just get busy. And then, I don't know, I think phones became more popular. Smartphones. And then it just sucks you in. And I hate it so much.
Oh, you mean social media and stuff?
Yeah. And just being on your phone. So I think that kind of... So I'm trying to at least like read a chapter a night before bed.
Right.
But usually when I get home, I'm tired and I just go to bed.
Yeah. Well, that's where the TV comes in for me. I've never been a big reader. I've never been. I like knowledge and I like learning things, but I can't sit there and be like, okay, so I'm just going to read this story about these things and I lose interest. Mm-hmm. I just don't have it in me. And my mother-in-law she's a retired librarian.
Yeah.
And she constantly tries to, I don't say constant, she, every probably 6 months, she'll try and suggest something. Hey, I was thinking about this book, because she's, of course, wants me to read. Because mm-hmm. Becky reads constantly. Like, Becky has the little Kindle thing, the Fire mm-hmm. Kindle, yeah. whatever, their tablet, and she's reading. Like, she has, like, a virtual library, so she has stuff, like, on a waiting list, and as soon as it pops in, she's like, ooh, I gotta put this one on the side, so sometimes she has, like, two books going at once. So, but my mother-in-law, the last one that she got me to read, and this has been, I forget how many years ago, several years ago now, mm-hmm. was 1984. That was the last book I read. And that was one of only maybe five that I've read since I left high school. Like, I'm not a reader. Like, I will sit down and read articles and study things. But as far as, like, for leisure reading, mm-hmm. I don't read.
I mean, 1984 is a book everyone should read. We had to read it in high school.
Yeah. Right now.
Oh, it's very relevant. The book I am currently reading, slowly but surely getting through, is... It's called Beauty's Punishment. It's the trilogy, the erotica that Anne Rice wrote back in the 80s.
Is this the one that's about Sleeping Beauty?
Mm-hmm. And BDSM, high protocol.
I heard this was like her version of Training of O, or the story of O, but nastier and a lot more descriptive. Like, I've heard that a lot of people are like, oh, sorry, I was touching myself when that chapter went through. Like, it's supposedly, like, it's raunchy in, like, the best way.
It is. And she gives you just so many ideas. Like, there's this one, like, they dress the slaves up as ponies. They're super, like, decorated, and they're about to go down the bridal path, and the lords or ladies... or the prince or whatever, is on a horse. And they have a big old paddle. And so you have to, like, you know, like, lift, you know, prance and run. And they're just hitting you with the paddle as they're, you know, riding alongside of you. And I'm just like, that's amazing. Why can't we do that?
I've heard a lot of good stuff about it. I heard that anybody who thought that the 50 Shades of Fuck was... a good thing, or if they got them excited that should be their next step, is to just jump right into the Anne Rice stuff, because it's supposedly, because obviously it's more accurate for people who do this.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's night and day.
Like. Well, that's non-consensual rapey shit, and apparently, and again, I haven't read either mm-hmm. of them, but that's why I have a reader in my family, which is my wife. She said that to give you a perfect example I guess I'm doing book reviews now. The 50 Shades of Fucker was, because I'm not going to promote it or talk about it, is she, before she started, because obviously she's my producer now. Mm-hmm. So before she started working with me, she had this bubble that she liked to live in. And her husband goes to work, he ties up girls, he unties them, he comes home. She knew everything because we were friends ahead of time. She just, her bubble, we don't talk about it. So what little bit that I would talk about with her that happened on set, because like I said, she just is like, eh. And now she could give a fuck less. She's all she loves the girl. She comes sit on set. But she told me when she read the 50 Shades movie that, or the story, that she was like, I could easily say that I've been more aroused listening to what little bit you talk about to me about work than I ever was reading that fucking book. But then when she talked about the Anne Rice thing, it was, well, she just couldn't keep her hands to herself. And so I was like,
Yeah, it's very, very hot. And yeah, very descriptive. It is a bit repetitive, but there's only so many times you can say penis and...
You have to start getting like penthouse forums where it's like his hot throbbing member. Like, just call it a cock over and over. Don't call it a throbbing member ever again.
She likes to use the word phallus.
There's something really erotic about that word. Mm-hmm. I like that word.
Yeah. Right now, the part, one of the princes, he's getting fitted for a phallus, you know, butt plug, horse tail.
Oh, well, there's that. And it sounds like she is, at least, it sounds like, from what you say and what Becky has told me, that it sounds like it's more accurate. Like, it's she, it comes from a place that she probably is, at least, if she doesn't, isn't familiar through actual doing, she's at least researched enough that she knows what she's talking about, rather than the watered down 50 Shades thing to where it's like, I'm going to punch you in the throat and do what I want. Non-consent, non-consent, non-consent.
Yeah.
So, but everybody, every time I get mad about it, people are like, JP, it's just a book. And I was like, but it's a shitty book.
It is, and it's, yeah, it's promoting BDSM in not the best light, and it's not the safest way. So, like, let's say someone were to read it, and they're like, oh my god, that's so hot. I want to do that. I want to try it. And then they're doing it all wrong.
Right.
And then it just ruins the experience for both of the, you know, people involved. And it's like...
And I think that's one of the things, like I was telling you earlier too, that it's like people are so, they have such a misconstrued idea of what this industry is and what we do, especially with the BDSM stuff. Mm-hmm. Like we're a bunch of deviants, and why in the fuck would this poor little girl really need to be beat up that much all the time? And why, what's wrong with this asshole that he feels the need to continuously beat up poor little women? And it's like, and then without wrapping their head around or even caring to ask questions, they just instantly are like, well, excuse me. They're like, well, fuck it. We're just not going to do it. I'm not going to pay attention. I don't care because I don't understand it. So fuck them. They're going to hell and they're all wrong and they're dirty little perverts. And people don't, I mean, it's just, but as we were saying too, it's the people who don't understand and have been shamed so much that they're like, this is, no, there's something wrong with you. There's no way that could be healthy. And
yeah. I mean, there are people that I've met in the scene that they're not doing it for the right reasons.
This is true, too.
Or they're doing it to deal with trauma, but maybe it's not the best way to deal with that.
They're not dealing with that trauma the correct way with BD. Because I've seen that, too. I've seen people that they use this to help with trauma. And I've seen it happen, work in a very positive way. Mm-hmm. But I've also seen what you're talking about, where they come into it and they're going about it in a very in the wrong way. And it's all, it seems like it's, I'm hungry. It's time for sushi. Sorry, I don't know if you guys picked that up on the mic, but that was loud. It's like a bear walked through here. Fuck, I forgot what I was thinking. Such a loud hunger growl.
The people doing this for the, or...
Oh yeah, they're doing it, and it's what it's doing instead of it helping them to find the strength to get past something that was traumatic for them in the past. Mm-hmm. It seems like it's making it worse, because instead of them finding a positive thing, they're like, well, maybe I just, hit me harder next time, and then punch me in the throat, like, and it keeps having to get harder and harder. It's like, you're not fixing, you're deepening the wound, and you're making it harder for you and everyone around you.
Yeah.
But there's some people that you're like, okay, no, this doesn't work.
I just wish more people would listen to our side.
Right.
Upstairs. So, yeah, because I dated someone who thought it was, he watched one of my kink.com scenes and thought it was abuse.
Right.
And I was like, what? I was like, what you don't see is me laughing in between the takes, how happy I am, the smile on my face.
Right.
But then turns out later he was like sexually abused as a child. So it was kind of like, I guess, suppressed.
Right. And there's times that it doesn't, and I've seen it go not just on the submissive side or the bottom or whatever title you want to go with. I've also seen it on the top where we had a guy that I knew back in the day and he wanted a shot. Can I try that? And we're like, yeah, sure. And we, as soon as it happened, we're like, nope, because it's intoxicating. There is something, and it's, you know, the whole thing with power, and you have this power, and it's very delicate. It's a very delicate power that you as a top are given, and a big, big fucking responsibility that just you can't take lightly. And do I enjoy torturing women and watching them cry? Of course I do. But I also know that there's a line, and there's a very, very strict, deep line drawn in the sand, and you don't cross that ever. And I think when I watched this, I felt like this person lost the perspective on where that line was. And it got too intoxicating, and it was empowering, and the ego swole like really fast. And I was like, okay, we're done. We're not doing this ever again. And so watching it, the same thing, and of course finding out later that there was deep-rooted shit going on with that person, and this was basically, it was the bully syndrome. Like, the bullies are always being beat up and fucked with by someone bigger than them. So shit rolls downhill and they bully other people. Yeah. I feel like it was the same thing with this person. It was like they got the power and they instantly were like, I can do these things. And this person, for the most part, wanted it. But there wasn't the care and the attentiveness and the empathy even to be a top to where you're like, okay, that's enough. Like, even as much as you and I've worked together, there's still a point where I'm like, all right, I need to stop or this might go too far and it not be fun. Mm-hmm. And that was missing. So, like I said, I've seen it on both sides where the bottom is doing it for the wrong reasons, just like the top. But there's also that need that people, and this is my opinion. And that's the thing. This is my fucking opinion. It's my podcast, my opinion. I feel like full-blown, I'm probably going to get some slack for this one, but full-blown 24/7 nonstop, no excuses, has to be DS all the time. I don't feel like that's healthy. I think that 23/6, but I feel like there has to be a point where you do get to stand up and you do get to say and you have to have an equal moment, because if it's 24/7 nonstop, you're here and the other person's down here and it never has a timeout. I can't imagine. I don't think that it's healthy. It doesn't seem healthy.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I would agree with you on that. You know, I see, you know, people are like master slave. Like, I think that's great. And like, I've had people in dynamics like that, but they also acted like, you know, like a normal couple. It wasn't like all the time.
I don't know a lot of people that do that, but I've the people that claim the 24/7, that's the part where I'm like, I don't get. Because I mean, I did the whole thing with the upper floor and with the training of O, and I've had these situations like this, and I love it. I think it's a fun thing to do, and I think it's hot to play those games and to play those roles. But to be told what to do nonstop, to never think for yourself, or to need to tell someone what to do nonstop, I just don't think it's healthy. And again, I don't know a lot of people that do that, but you hear people claim the 24/7. I was like, I don't see how that works. I don't understand it.
Yeah, I don't know.
50 Shades of Fucker. But that's also like when people are like, oh, if you need safe words, then I'm not going to play with you. And I'm like, I'm sure you've branded those people.
Mm-hmm. A few. And I'm like, there's no fucking way. I would never play with you. Mm-mm. If I can't use my safe word, then what's the point? That means I don't trust you.
Yeah.
And then that means we can't play.
Yeah. And that, I've never understood that either. It just doesn't make sense to me. And I understand, you know, no, I don't. I like, even if you and I were married for 10 years, I still don't think there would ever be a moment where I'm like, no safe words. Because what if I cross a line? What if that that intoxication happens to me, which, I mean, I feel like after 15 years, it probably would have happened if it was going to happen.
Yeah.
But you never know. And I guess it's just, I don't understand. And for people that play with no safe words, more power to you. If that's the trust level that you're on with this person that you're with in the relationship. And I mean, but there's also people who like to, you know, play with guns during sex or play with knives and be just like through the super extreme stuff. Mm-hmm. So maybe in the back of the head, it's like, well, we're going to say there's no safe words and they're not going to be safe words. But at the end of the day, if there's enough trust to say there's no safe words, but there's also has to be the attentiveness to know that this time when I said stop, it fucking meant stop.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess it could be. It's just not me. That's just not me. It's an opinion, motherfucker. Plural in case there's more than one. Just my opinion.
But
what is some of your favorite stuff to do when you do BDSM play? That's where we've opened this door. Let's talk about this. Like,
I'm very passionate about BDSM because, you know, it started something I became super passionate about after I lost my interest in architecture. Mm-hmm. And then it became my career, which was awesome. So I love talking about it. I love being whipped a lot.
Like single tail?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean that, you know, dragon.
The dragon tail. Not too bad.
No, it's pretty good. And then I love being tied up. So, I also, I guess it's more fetishy, but like pissing, cigar play, which is super like a DS dynamic.
Right. Now, are you the ashtray?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I was going to say, because I know there's the ashtray thing. There's also a lot of the smoke, and then there's the heat mm-hmm. that comes off. Like, I've seen several people play with those things, and I was like, watching it, it's very erotic. Not mm-hmm. so much about what the top's doing, but it's how the bottom responded to it. I was like, fuck, I keep going. Don't mind me. I'm not touching myself at all. Like, it's mm-hmm. something about it super hot.
Yeah, it is really hot. And at first, I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. But then I went to this event. They had this cigar lounge every night. My friend was like, hey, do you want to try it? And I'm like, sure.
Right.
And then I just fell in love. It was one of the most intimate experiences I've ever had. Like, even including sex. Like, it was really intimate.
I feel like a lot of BDSM and even BDSM, obviously, there's the DS, there's the mm-hmm. fetish, there's all the stuff. I feel like there's usually more intimacy doing those things than there is with just good old sex.
It can be, yeah.
I think if it was done right, it should be.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, that's just me. But again, I think it's because of the attentiveness and the large amount of enjoyment that you get from it. So you have to be so dedicated to that certain thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what makes it hot.
Yeah.
Cigar stuff. Boot blacking's hot too.
It is hot. I think I want to start doing that.
There was, do you remember Stefanos from the upper floor?
Mm-hmm.
He had a slave back in the day. And she was really, really into boot blacking. And we did a thing on the upper floor where we had her teach the other slaves how to do the boot blacking. And he was like, JP, you should let her give you a boot job. And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about, but sure. And I wear, can I have them on? Well, you've seen my boots. I wear pretty nice leather, thick leather boots. She gets down there, and after my boots have been polished and cleaned and everything's done, she starts the boot job. It was one of the most erotic things. I could feel her tongue so hard against the leather that I could feel it. Like, it almost felt like I didn't have a boot on, like when she was licking the leather, because I could feel it against my foot. I sat there and like, I'm gripping things. Like, it's getting my, like, holy shit, I cannot believe that someone's licking my boot and it's this fucking arousing. And it was so hot. And she, for lack of a better term, basically made love to my boot with her mouth. It was so fucking hot that I was like, I need to go outside and smoke a cigarette. Like, it was fucking crazy hot.
I don't think I've ever seen anything quite like that.
But just imagine, like, you... Because it's boot worship is what it is. Mm-hmm. And she was into it so much and got so turned on that she... And I've seen and I've had girls sit there and, you know, grind on my boot. And
mm-hmm.
no, she made love, man. Like, she was all like... And she'd sit there and massage your calves, like, mm-hmm. and, like, the lower part, like, in your Achilles heel or tendon. Like, she'd sit there and, like, rub in your leg. Like, it was very erotic. Like I said, I was the first time. I was like, shit, I feel like I should... I need to go take a cold shower or something. Like, it was really hot. I feel like now that you're talking about, like, with the other stuff, I bet you probably, you should give it a shot. You probably.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've licked boots and stuff, and I like being stepped on. So,
see, yeah. That's my thing. I like to step on, too. I love stepping on people.
It's nice. It's like, I don't know, it's just the pressure, I think. So there was something, I'm just reminding myself of it. As a kid, I would be, like, so stressed and high-strung that I'd ask people to, like, grab my hand and squeeze it super tight. And there's just something about it that just, like, relaxes me, and I just, it's just comforting.
Right.
So when people step on me, like, yeah, sometimes it hurts, but I'm just, like...
It's grounding. Like, there's zen out. There was a model back in the day. She shot with Kink for a little while, then she stopped. I don't think she models anymore. I don't think. She may still model. Either way, she was very open about her anxiety. Like, she had super bad anxiety, and she would go on social media, and it was more playful, but that was her way to help, like, get it out of her system. And she was like, "Where's the biggest man I know? Please come lay on me." And there was, and she would say things like, "No strings attached. I'm not fucking you. Just come. I need the biggest motherfucker I know to come lay on me." And I would always be like, "I know a big guy," and, like, raise my hand, joking. But that was her thing, and it was this comforting thing, and it was because of her anxiety. And if you basically held her down, not unconsensually or non-consensually, but just laid on top of her, the same thing. All of that pressure was this, like, okay, I feel better. And it calmed her down. And it's the same thing with the weighted blankets they do for autistic children or, like, any level of autism. I mean, people do it now. Like, Becky has one. She has, like, a 15-pound blanket that she sleeps under. And she was like, since she's gotten it, she has gotten better sleep than she ever has in her entire life.
Oh, that sounds nice.
You should look into it. There's a whole thing. There's, like, all this information about your height and your weight and the way you sleep. It's the same. It's the same kind of technology with pillows. Like, if you get this pillow for your side sleeper and this one for your back, there's a thing that I think it's more based around, like, your size than anything else. And, like, I've gotten under it, and I'm kind of like, coffee. I don't like the feeling, but that's just me, because that's, you are very much, you're getting this constant full body hug. But I bet it's probably the same thing. You if you like the stepping on and the squeezing, you probably would love this thing.
Yeah, and I guess rope too. It's kind of like a...
It's a big squeeze.
Yeah. Lots of bundles of hugs.
Just random little strands of hugging all over.
Yeah, that also hurt at the same time.
But it's done with love. There's rope sluts, and you know what I'm talking about with the rope sluts, the ones who, let me back up. I love rope sluts, especially when they don't know it about themselves. Like, when they come to me, and I've been blessed, or whatever the term would be that I want to go with, but I've been fortunate enough to work with a lot of people for the first time and give them their first bondage experience. And I've had girls that are like, blah, 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 and they're just hyper, and they're talkative, and you can tell they're nervous because they get more chattery once it's like, let's get on stage and start doing this. And as soon as the rope gets wrapped around them, they just get quiet. Lean around, because, you know, I'm always, like, behind. I kind of lean around, like, you good? And they're like, yeah, I'm really good. And they just, like, someone drugged them. They get so chill. And I'm like, you sure you're feeling okay? You got really quiet. And they're like, I'm just really relaxed all of a sudden. And they had no idea. And I was like, you're a rope slut. That's what this is. Like, and the more, like, it got into it, like, you had to kind of start the scene and come in and go, okay, you ready to get started? And they're like, yeah, okay, yeah, I'm ready. Because they were so fucking relaxed from just being tied up. I wish I knew that feeling. Because I don't know.
You're missing out.
Yeah. Well, I've tried. I've given it a shot several times. And it just, it's... Surprisingly, it's not my thing.
So you start
putting rope on me, and I can't breathe. And I get panicky. Like, I get anxious. Like, I cannot be restrained. Like, I can sit there and take the pleasure of being, like, flogged and spanked. And, like, I get all of that stuff. I mean, half the stuff. And it's not like I sit around, just so you guys don't think I'm that weird. I don't sit around torturing myself, but that's how I know what I'm doing to you guys, because I've got trust issues, I'll admit it. That's why I probably don't like being tied up.
Yeah.
But I do shit to myself, so I'm like, oh, well, I wonder what this would... Oh, fuck, I'm going to do that on set next time. Like, and it's playing with myself. That's the reason also that I don't do a lot of electrical play or get new electric toys, because I hate electricity, and I'm like, I'm going to do it to her, I got to do it to me, and I don't want to do that to me, so I don't give a... Well, it broke, we're not buying a new one.
I mean, you did mention... A cattle prod earlier today. Mm-hmm. Did you try it on yourself?
The first time before I ever used it, I did. And it's, if I remember, before, it was the chair.
It was the chair, not me.
Before I used it, I was told, I was like, this is the meanest cattle prod that kink.com owns, and it belongs to Device Bondage. And I was like, bring it to me and let me see. And I used it on myself, and it hurt so bad that it hurt my feelings. Like, if you that have you ever experienced something like that, to where it hurts your feelings? It's so fucking painful. It hurt. I hit myself in the calf, because that's where I always shock myself, because mm-hmm. there's enough muscle and meat there. And it hurt up here. It hurt my thigh. Was it the femur right here?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. It's a thought. Now, since I got a shitty comment, now I'm like... But anyway, it hurt the big fucking up here, mm-hmm. my thigh. And it was in my calf. And it hurt for like an hour. Like, it ached. It hurt so bad. And I was like, all right, I know what it feels like. The best thing is I had the executive producer. He was brand new. I was brand new. He was brand new. And he was kind of like trying to, I can do this. I'm into this stuff, mm-hmm. too. And he's like, who wants to shock me? Don't ever, ever walk into a room when I'm there and ask for a volunteer to hurt someone. Because you know who's going to do it. Me. And when he said it, and he was like, who wants to use it? I want to see what this feels like. Who wants to use it? I was like, I will. And my videographer was like, he's the executive producer. I'm like, I don't care. He came in here and asked for it. I'm going to give it to him. So I told him, turn around, put your hands on the wall. And he puts his hands on the wall, kind of like he's being searched, like a spread eagle kind of thing. And he's leaning back, and he's like, where are you going to do it? I was like, where do you want me to do it? He's like, hit me in the ass. That's, I think it'll be great. And I was like, are you ready? I was like, make sure there's nothing below you. This is going to hurt. And he's like, it can't be that bad. For starters, I charged it, because I'm like, are you sure? Because you know this is going to suck. And I'm sitting there charging it the whole time. He's like, just do it. And I plug it into his ass, and I don't let go. And it dropped him instantly. And then, of course, I let it go. So I probably had it on him for a good 2 seconds, like a 1-1000, 2-1000. And then I let go, because he was collapsing. And he sat there, and he didn't cry, but he definitely had his feelings hurt, like, badly. And he was like, fuck, why didn't you tell me? I was like, I did, motherfucker. I warned you and told you this is mean. I just used it on me, and this is not something you want to fuck with. And you came in here like, just use it. So I used it. You can't be mad, because you fucking asked for it. And to this day, well, I haven't seen him obviously in years, but ever since that, he never walked on set and asked me to do shit. He never came in and was like, anybody want to try this out on me? Because he knew I'd be like, I'll do it, boss. Oh.
Yeah, I feel like you'd be the meanest.
We ran a campaign. We ran a campaign at Kink. Like, we spent a day shooting a video, and the campaign was the meanest motherfucker on the internet. And there's like this, I've got the video somewhere. I don't know where it's at. Like, we ended up having, I think, 4 or 5 cameras set up. And I don't know if you ever saw it at Kink. We had this big circular platform that was motorized, and it would rotate.
I don't know if I ever did.
They stood me on it. The idea that I kind of came up with, I was like, it'd be cool if I'm like moving in and out of the light. And Disco did, I told you I was going to reference him. Disco did this really cool light pools to where I would come in and out of light, and it was total dark. And it was down, it was total darkness in the Roman bath, that big one that was like where the pool had been filled in. And I'm on this thing, and I'm rotating, and there's cameras up, and there's cameras low, and there's cameras like they're fucking everywhere. And they just keep calling him and my PA at the time. We're like just calling out random, like, say so-and-so. And I would say it. And they're like, say something. Because I'm like, I don't know what to say. And they're like, they would just feed me lines. And we did this for probably 5 or 6 minutes of me just randomly saying shit, spinning on this really slow circle to where I finally was like, I gotta get off. I think I'm dizzy. And they put that together with like clips of all the crazy shit that I did. And we did this, Kink did this whole campaign of the meanest motherfucker on the internet.
Did you win?
Well, there was no competition. Mm-hmm. They just campaigned it as me being the meanest motherfucker on the internet. And I know that there's mean people, and there's probably meaner, but consistently, I'm going to say I win. Because
I would agree.
And I say mean, not dismissing, because, I mean, there was the legendary PD that we all know who started Insex, who was just a fucking, like, the shit he did and these women allowed him to do for whatever reason. Was just crazy fucking sadistic. But consistently, and having people go, you know what? And I'm going to go back and let him do it again, was, I feel like, the difference between me and most people. I'm not saying PD is most people, but I feel like that was the thing with me, is I could be super fucking crazy and super sadistic, and people are like, I'm going to go back and do that again. Mm-hmm. So I think that was the difference that separated me. So that's why I was like, I will claim the self-proclaimed title of meanest motherfucker on the internet.
Yeah. I've worked with a lot of BDSM producers and, tops even in my personal life. And I would definitely say that you are probably one of the best, handlers I've ever had.
Thanks.
And, as far as, BDSM, someone actually hitting me at this point in time, it probably would mainly just be you that I'm super comfortable with.
Right.
I've had other people, flogging or, whatever, but the scenes that we do, I have no interest in doing them with anyone else.
There's a lot of girls that I feel like, thank you for starters, yeah. But there's a lot of girls that are that way now, that they're like, hey, well, it's, there used to be more people in the game, mm-hmm. bigger names, I should say. There wasn't just me. And then you look around as far as male handlers and go, well, there's that guy over there. And I think there's one over there. There yeah. used to be, they were here and here, and kink used to be full of male mm-hmm. handlers. And that, James, step back. He's not in front mm-hmm. of the camera anymore. Matt Williams is doing whatever Matt Williams is doing now.
Yeah.
So he's not, and he had left the company anyway. So and there's so few around, especially reputable ones. I mean, there's plenty of male handlers out there, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. But reputable or, that have a 15 years experience doing something like this, I think is few and far between.
Yeah.
So I'll take it all day. The girl's like, nope, you're the only guy that gets to touch me. I was like, I'll take it. Sorry, motherfuckers. But yeah. I think a lot of the people that are there, they have put themselves in situations to where they have broken trust, or they've put people in situations to where the model's like, you know what? Whether it's trust or whether you didn't read me correctly and you went too far and you didn't pay attention, or you didn't respect a safe word and played mm-hmm. the, oh, is that what you said? And I've heard not a shit ton of horror stories, but I've heard enough to know that there's handlers out there who easily could have been cool and kept their reputation or increased their reputation at being trustable and being one of the few that anybody would allow to do it, and instead betrayed the trust. And people are like, no, I'm not, fuck you, I'm not doing it. That's yeah. sad. Well, it's sad for them. It's good for me. It's good for the fans. See what I do for you guys?
Yeah, I don't... I hear about consent violations, and I'm just like, how? How does one think that that's okay?
It's the intoxication. It's the power. It is. It's. I mean, you've heard about it. You've done enough of this in your life. There's this, the same, the biscuit you get when you're like, fucking let me just lay here and I'm high. And mm-hmm. high, I'm going to clarify this too. High off the endorphins and the fun that we do with the bondage. and you're in your spot, and you had that, this is my moment, leave me alone and let me enjoy this. And mm-hmm. after a good hard scene, like even today, like I call it, I get my top biscuit, like I get my thing too, mm-hmm. and I get that same satisfaction out of it. And I feel like throughout the years with me finding models like you and other girls who like show up, and they predominantly work with me for a while, or they work with me and everyone else is like, ooh, look at that one. Mm-hmm. I like her. And the first thing they do is pull her on set and then try and outdo me. And it's like, there's a reason that I do the things that I do. There's a level of trust and a reputation that I've had for a long time for mm-hmm. you and all of the women that trust me to do this. And then for someone to be like, I'm going to do this. And it doesn't work that way. And no. I've got a friend who just recently was telling me that, there wasn't a line crossed, but it was very clear with the activities that were brought up for that shoot. She was like, it was, to her anyway, she was like, I feel like they intentionally were like, I need to outdo what you did with JP. And she, when they were talking about what they were going to do, she's like, no, JP gets to do that. You don't get to do that. And I love that.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And I love that. But I also, I hold that on a really high level. Like I don't sit there and be like, haha, bitches. That's, yeah. I kind of do to myself, but I take it more as like an honor that I'm at a point where so many people are like him. He gets to do this and nobody else gets to do that. But that's what I was saying earlier. That's it. That's a lot of power to give someone.
Yeah.
A lot. So I feel very humbled that I have so many people that are like, yes, you get to do it, but no one else. But there's also people trying to copy the stuff. I'm like, oh, well, I must have done something right. You're trying to outdo me.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I would say so.
Okay. And then there's the fucking horn. Fuck, shit. I'm trying to remember what we were talking about before that shit started. Me, I think.
Just that you're amazing.
Thanks. It stopped. Okay,
it did stop.
All right, I'll figure out how to cut it back together at some point. What are some of the, tell us one, like one major change that BDSM doing this kind of stuff that you were like, this is the thing, like this was a turning point or like a good super positive thing that came from doing one of these things, one of these scenes. Motherfucker. I think someone's fucking with me. Not really, but it feels that way. So we're just going to move through it. Fuck them.
As far as like a scene, like shooting wise, like professional or in the
personal
lifestyle?
With the, yeah, with the cameras, without the cameras. Is it something that you went into like to do a bondage scene or BDSM scene and came out of it with like a, not like enlightenment, but like to where, you know, when you like a, is epiphany the right word?
Mm-hmm.
To where there was an epiphany, to where you were like, and maybe the first time you did it, to where you were like, ooh, and a light went off and that was something. Do you have any story around something like that?
I mean, when I went to the Citadel in San Francisco for the first time, definitely, as soon as I walked in, like, yeah, light bulb. You know, I got to see so many different things that I, like, someone was naked. I was like, oh my God, this is amazing.
You had never been around anything like this before?
Mm-mm.
Did you have any thoughts about bondage or BDSM when you went Mm-mm. there? You just walked in like, I'm going to a party.
Yeah.
No shit.
So, and, you know, thinking back, there were some things that I guess maybe would have, you know, led up to it or, you know, influenced it. But, yeah, so it just kind of took over my life. And I don't remember if it was the first time I got tied up, but it was very early on when I got tied up.
Right.
Literally just everything melted away. I had this void for like probably the better part of like 9 months or so. And like, I just felt so empty and it filled that. And like, I was just so happy and relaxed and I wasn't stressed. And like, I just had this huge like high from it, that I had never felt before.
Right.
And I just like, was like, I want that feeling. And so I just kept doing it.
Do you still get the same feeling? Do you still get the same effect from doing scenes?
Mm-hmm. I, you know, the more that I've done it over the years, and this is as I'm getting older also with just by sex, like I used to be able not orgasm through penetration. And then just within the last, I don't know, maybe four or five years, I have been.
Mm-hmm.
And with each year, it's getting more and more and more. Like, I can just tap into it super quickly. And that's the same with subspace and getting that high and that feeling.
Right.
Like, even if someone's just, like, I don't know, tying, you know, putting me in a hog tie and leaving me, I'll just fucking...
You can still get there.
Mm-hmm. So.
But sure, but I mean, we know that, too, that you're a rope slut. Like, you mm-hmm. do get to where you're like... Okay, like what I was describing earlier, you very much do. But it, I mean, I don't know that people understand when I talk about like you or like I talk about Casey Calvert, because mm-hmm. you two, especially you two, I mean, there's plenty of examples, but those are the two I know the best that were very much in the lifestyle, very much had discovered this about themselves, and then were like, oh, I can do this in front of a camera and mm-hmm. I can make more money off of it, or yeah. I can make a lot of money off of it. And I think it's beautiful. That's I'm like, I'm sitting there trying to be like creative with big words, but I'm like, that's, it is to still be able to get the pleasure out of it. And you're not like chasing the dragon, for lack of a better term, to where you're like, oh, I can still do this and I don't have to be, you know, punched in the throat 15 times after I've been mm-hmm. donkey kicked, or, you know, like you can still go in and not only can you get to it, but you've found a way to get to it easier than you were when you first started.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think that is? You think you got more comfortable with your own sexuality, or
maybe? I think also one of the reasons was, maybe there's a few reasons. Like, just because like I wanted it so bad, I wanted that feeling, And so I would just focus on what was happening to me and, you know, just extremely present. And then I would just think about afterwards, like that feeling, and maybe it just, you know, when you put energy into the universe, right. You know, you get it back, and that, I guess that's just what happened. Yeah. I don't know.
Do the way you like it.
I like it. And it's addictive. Oh, sorry, I'm gonna go.
Okay.
I zone out sometimes, or blink.
You're like, I got it, and then it's gone.
Because I you know, I was shooting a ton. And so, like, I couldn't have marks. I couldn't play super heavily.
Right.
So then when I got the chance to, it was so much easier to access it. Because I had remembered, you know, what it felt like. It was like coming back home.
Right.
And you have, like, that big, like, comfort, and it's warm. And, yeah, so it was just much easier to get to. Hmm. You're like, I'm home.
Here I am. Give it to me.
Yes.
Damn it. I had something, but I was like, I'm going to wait till you say your thing, and I don't remember what it was. where are we at on time?
It's
6. I want to make sure you... Is it... Six, yes, you need, six, to, need to get you going. Okay. Damn it. This is the thing. Is like, I feel like sometimes it takes an hour, like the first hour, to really be like, now we're talking.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, the inquiry minds. But we also get limited on time. But... Mm-hmm. Nonetheless, I think this has been fun.
Thank you. It has been fun.
I
always like talking with you. I feel like we talk a lot when we're shooting.
Right. And it's kind of a bit this way, people. Then this is why I started doing this, is because I want people to see this side. And whether it's talking about bondage or BDSM or traveling or camping or, mm-hmm. you know, whatever, or reading books. Like, I want people to be like, oh, I like that book too. Or I've been to that place. And so anyway, let's wrap this up, and we'll do the advice part. So, where this is the part where you get to just give whatever advice you want to someone coming in the industry. And I know you told me what you were thinking about doing, which I think it's good advice. But nonetheless, that's what I want to do. So, whatever advice you feel that you want to share, and it doesn't have to be a lot, but just whatever you want to share to someone that's coming into the industry for the first time, what would you say?
So my advice is, boric acid suppositories are your best friend.
For females.
If your pH feels off, you know, if you have a yeast infection, put a pill in overnight, gone. And it's only like, I think maybe $18, $20 for like 24 pills. So it beats going to the doctor, paying for the prescription, or getting the over-the-counter, which is already $20.
Right.
Like, you get these pills. You just need one.
And it balances out your pH.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is it...
It's insane amazing it works.
Is there any backlash to doing that? To like, does it, like, can it affect you negatively if you do too much of it? Or... I don't know, so that's why I'm asking.
I don't think so. I don't think I've heard anything bad about it from other girls.
Okay.
Everyone just swears by it. And it's like, even like, let's say like the first night it doesn't cure, just do another one the next night and it should take it away.
And it's boric acid.
Boric acid. Do not swallow the pill. Just shove it up your cooch.
Don't. And do your own research. Make sure it's okay. Talk to your doctors and shit.
Yeah.
Cause that's all I need. Somebody be like, I heard JP talking about it on the podcast and I shoved it in there. Well, now I gotta go to the doctor.
Yeah. I mean, this is just what us porn girls do.
Right.
And yeah, I was telling you, I was battling like yeast UTIs for like a month and a half when I first got in. You know, so much dick and everyone's sharing juices. And so, like the pill, like it starts with an F, but the pill that the doctor prescribed you wasn't working.
Right.
The over-counters were barely working. And like, I was getting so frantic because I was like, nothing's working. And I was like, I want to work. Right. I want to fuck.
So, I need my pH balanced with the dick.
Yes. And then boric acid changed everything.
That's crazy. So. And a lot of people use it?
Mm-hmm.
There's so many tricks, and I don't feel that people... And that's something no one's ever given advice on, hey, let's maintain your pH balance in your pussy. Because, you know, there's so much to talk about. That's why I ask everyone, because everyone's got a different view on things. But I think it goes... Like, people don't know women coming into this, like, that when you start throwing a lot of random dick and pussy in there, especially because at the end of the day, it's just a big circle of people that are fucking each other.
Yeah.
I mean, there's the 6 degrees of separation, and there's probably only three or four at the end of the day in this industry. And up and down and up and down. I mean, and if you don't put the effort into maintaining, your vagina will fucking mutiny. Like, it's gonna, like, you don't want to fix me? Watch this. We'll fucking shut the place down.
Yeah.
And I don't think that there's enough. I don't know. I know there's a lot of resources out there for a lot of things, but I think there's, unfortunate, there's a lot of trial and error, especially in this industry. And because there's no certain place, that's why I was like, well, I may not be the place to go to, but I'm going to at least create a place that has this information so people can go, oh, let me go look here, which I need to get better at my keywords so people can be like, vaginal support.
It's the best piece of advice I've ever gotten about.
That's pretty amazing because we
care of stuff down there.
We do get a lot, especially as being a producer. It's like, you know, I have silicone and I have water-based. And I also keep coconut oil because there's a lot of the pH. And then there's some girls that show up who I really appreciate it when they show up and they're like, I've got a super sensitive pussy and I brought my own lube. Is there any way we can use this? And it's a simple thing. Like, it's me, I have gloves on, so I don't give a fuck what you're using. As long if that's what you need, that's what we do. But there are sometimes with a boy, he's like, hey, can I, let me see some of that? Because it, I mean, it's the chances are a lot less for him to have problems than it is for you. But nonetheless, there still needs to make sure there's not a reaction to him. Yeah. So I appreciate it when girls know that they're super sensitive and they bring their stuff in. But I also feel bad for the ones who show up and you're like, you, no one's told you. And you can tell. And you know what I'm talking about. You can tell. You're like, yeah, no one's told you, have they? And you really are about to break that thing and you're going to be out of work for a while because you're not maintaining your vagina. So, with that, maintain your vagina.
Please, for the sake of, like, everyone involved.
Yeah.
Because I've heard of horror stories. Like, girls show up and it's like, just fills up the room, the odor.
And there's nothing wrong with vaginal scents. As far as I know, every woman that I've ever been around, professionally or not professionally, there's an odor of some sort. Because that's what a vagina is. But then there's also the, when it's beyond pungent and when it's one of those, it's not you've been out jogging and running out in the sun all day.
Yeah.
Odor, it's the, something's wrong.
Yeah, something's wrong.
And that's
wrong.
What you're talking about. It's like when the panties come on set and you're like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
Like it's instant, like it's, it, you can, there's a, they're well.
Yeah.
People who know, know. Mm-hmm. And clearly people that don't. So there's that. This is awesome. You were amazing.
Yes, thank you.
I'm so glad we get to chat because it's usually like shoot and chat and shoot and chat and see you later. So like not to have to run and have Disco looking at us and being like, we got to move, guys. Also, I said I was going to do this. I'm going to put a little voting thing somewhere up here on the screen for people that watch us on YouTube. I'm trying to talk Disco into coming on so you guys can see him and meet him. So, there, I think. I don't know if my finger's in frame or not. But I'm going to put a little thing, a little poll, and if you guys want to see Disco and hear Disco and I talk about stuff, then vote and I'll figure out if we get to do it or not. Because he's nervous.
I highly recommend it. He's been in the business for what?
As long as I have.
Yeah.
He's 15 years deep.
They both have very good stories that you want to hear.
And I've even come and I told him, and I've come up with a thing, you know, because it's Alone with the Pope, so it's like me talking with people, and I'm going to do like an advice thing, I think, from time to time, and I'm going to call it like Quickies with the Pope, because I think it's cute and funny. But I even told him, I was like, we'll call your segment Drinks with Disco. And him and I can sit here and have a couple drinks and just shoot the shit and see, because he's, you know, like you said, he's got stories. He's as much of a talker as I am. So I'm like,
and you both are so funny.
And that with the two of us going back and forth, I mean, after 7 years of working together, like pretty much almost half of our career, we've been working as a team, and we still aren't sick of hearing each other's stories and jokes. I mean, I think that says something.
Yeah.
So if you guys want to hear Disco and I have drinks and be funny.
Yes, please vote yes so then I can watch it at home.
Because it's going to be good. So, all right, let's get out of here. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you.
We'll talk to you soon.
Yes.
See ya.
Bye.
That was awesome.
Yay, thank you.